Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
Good Monday morning, everybody. Hope you had a fantastic weekend. I know that you guys got out to the march yesterday. It sounded like you guys had a great time. 50,000 people. I still can't get over the amount of people. The video that you sent, Key, was extraordinary. It sounded like a great day.
No, it was. It was a trip because LZ and I, we parked away from the start of the march, and then we walked, I don't know, what did you say? We walked about a half a mile to the march.
About a half a mile to the march, yeah.
We walked about a half a mile to the start of the march, and LZ was also working at the same time, and we was weaving in and out of traffic. And then when we got in the beginning of the march, we got to the front of the line, basically. And as you turn around, you look behind you, there was tons of people. Then also in front of us, even though we were in the front, but it was already, people had already started, I guess, another whole section. And so by the time those two merged, it was crazy, man. It was wild, though. I enjoyed it, and it was one of those deals where you didn't see police there. They were not in. I didn't see one in sight until we got to West Hollywood. Then you saw a couple sheriffs block off a few streets. Other than that, it was nice and calm and peaceful as you would expect. Anyway, the only time it gets crazy is when the agitators start to agitate things, and obviously that wasn't the case yesterday, but it was fun. It was real good. It was fun.
It was wonderful to see so many different ages. You know, to Key's point, I mean, there were kids on the sideline holding up signs. There were kids passing out water. You know, so even if they couldn't march themselves, they were finding other ways to, be involved and to show their support for wanting this change. And it was a beautiful day. You know, I went there, to Key's point, working, making sure that I was, present, so that I would either write about it immediately or later. But, it was just so, I just remember, and guys, I don't know if you remember like your first marches, but like my very first march on like that level was the Million Man March. And I, went to DC and, obviously there's a whole bunch of brothers and, we did our thing. And then I went to the March on Washington for Gay Rights. I went to that one. And that was totally opposite. Very few black people, mostly white, mostly cisgender, mostly male. But that was incredible to be around. But it was very clear it was separate. Million Man March with black people, the Gay March with a bunch of white people. And the two worlds didn't spend a lot of time intermingling. Yesterday, to see Black Lives Matter and Pride be together, and see all the chocolate and leadership and, but the white people right there, nobody's feeling a certain kind of way. Nobody's feeling out of place. It was an incredible transformation of things to see as someone who has either covered or been in these large scale rallies before. To see the blending of the races and the ages was just awesome.
No, it was, Trav. It was a trip, though. Like, because LZ talked about him working. Well, he put me to work. I was his spotter. I had to find the right people that he can interview, he makes sure he's interviewing
a spotter.
Right. And he ran up on the right person. But just being able to see, I never, it's not that I never envisioned, but I hadn't seen white people per se or Asian people with a shirt or a sign holding up a black fist with the pride colors in there mixed in. It was a trip. It was one of those moments where you just sit back and you think about it. You're like, damn, man, this is way different. Way different.
Well, I think that's what Greg Popovich was kind of getting at with Roger Goodell, the opposite of that. And Popovich was critical of Roger Goodell. And what he said to the New York Times was, a smart man is running the NFL and he didn't understand the difference between the flag and what makes the country great. All the people who fought to allow Colin Kaepernick to have the right to kneel for justice. The flag is irrelevant. It's just a symbol that people glom onto for political reasons. And because, like you just said, Key, like you mentioned, LZ, this was a congregation of people that was not just one thing for one cause. This is a lot of different people coming together for, at least yesterday, a couple of different reasons. And everybody's saying, no, this time we're going to do it differently. This time we're going to make sure that we have this right. And Greg Popovich is looking at Roger Goodell saying, hold on a second. You're telling me that your most recent statement is legitimate, because you're too smart of a guy to have been okey-doked by what happened a few years ago. And he's calling into question the sincerity of Roger Goodell's statement a couple of weeks ago, or a couple of Fridays ago, saying, you know, we got it wrong. We need to do better. We need to listen to our players. He gave him a hard time for getting bullied by President Trump the first time through. And you just wonder if the NFL is different. Like you just described, the rally was different. The movement is different. The feeling in the streets is different. There's different types and more types of people at these movements. Is the NFL different this time? Because Popovich says no.
You know, it's hard to say if it's different. They certainly, the first time around when Kaepernick took the knee and you know, everybody responded the way that they did because that particular thing or the kneeling down was hijacked and turned into military and flag opposed to police brutality and justice and racism. They hijacked it and it was such a strong hijack that there was only a handful of professional athletes and anybody for that matter that was really voicing their opinion loudly. It was only a handful. So when you only got a handful voicing that loudly, it doesn't have nearly the effect as it does when you got millions of people voicing it loudly. So that's where we are today. We got millions of people from all walks of life voicing it louder. The NFL, until it affects them, when it starts to affect them, then that's when they got something to say. That's always been the case. It hasn't started to affect them yet. See, it was going to affect them with Kaepernick. So then they said, okay, how do we stop the bleeding? We stop it because of this. Okay, let's say that. Let's do what he says. Boom, bam, bam. And so it slowed it down. Now you got an opportunity to step up and do some other things, but guess what? They ain't missing nothing. They ain't been threatened by nothing. So to them, Roger's statement is clean and good enough. That's why we don't need to release no more. Couple teams release something, couple players. We good. Couple coaches. We good. We don't need to let's just, because we're not missing nothing. AT&T ain't pulled out on us yet. Or Coca-Cola hasn't decided to. Nike hasn't decided to snatch it off the logo. You know, they ain't losing no money. Until they start to lose something, then they're going to say something.
You know, it's so interesting, man. Think about the beginning of the season for the NBA, trying to tell the world that we did not bow down to China and that we are still for democracy. Like, that's when the NBA season started, with Daryl Morey in a tweet blowing up the spot, and LeBron James being at the center of it, not because he did the tweet, but because the message that he sent out wasn't satisfactory for a lot of people. And he was right in the center of it. So it's no surprise that once again, here's the NBA is in the midst of this another big conversation about human rights, and LeBron James is once again in the center of it. Patrick Beverly said it best. He said, we hooping. Like, that's the power, that's the influence that he has. And because he has so much weight in this space, that's why people expected more from him with regards to China and how they were dealing with Hong Kong. Because he has so much weight in this space, that's how come when he says we hooping, everybody said, okay, we hooping, because they know he legit when it comes to this conversation. There's a phrase that Jay-Z says that I've embraced as like one of my mantras, which is I'm good on every MLK Boulevard. I love that line. Mm-hmm. You drop me any city in the country, I'm good, because my people know I was there. I'm good on any MLK Boulevard, and I'm also good on any Christopher Street Boulevard. You want to drop me off in the gay community, I'm good there too, because my people know I was there. And when you got that kind of influence, and I'm not trying to brag, I'm just saying, when you know people know you've been there, then you can say some stuff. LeBron James been there. So he can say some stuff.
And that's what Greg Popovich is saying about Roger Goodell, that he has not been there, right? He goes on to say, it's just hypocritical. It's incongruent. It doesn't make sense. People weren't blind. Do you go to your staff and your players and talk about injustices in democracy and how to protest? I don't get it. I think they've put themselves in a position that's untenable. That's what he's saying, LZ, what you just said, that they're staking out this position now that is incongruent with what they were doing
exactly
a few years ago. And now, and so when, whether it's Greg Popovich or anybody else inside that league, that kind of looks at it and says, okay, I mean, that's great that you said what you said, but let's see what happens next. It makes a lot of sense to me. It makes a lot of sense to me that they're waiting to see what happens next, because when Colin Kaepernick did it originally, it was met with, you know, we're going to do this, we're going to do this. And then Donald Trump, the president of the United States, came out aggressively, and the league very quickly got out of that business.
Well, they were getting ready to lose something. They was going to lose something. They was getting ready to lose fans. They was getting ready to lose ratings.
This isn't a matter of them seeing the light. This is a matter of them doing some calculations, and that the bottom line is not going to be effective. Therefore, they can do the right thing.
Absolutely. Think about it. Think about it, Travis, when it first came out, when Kaepernick first came. It was, TV ratings was starting to, football was starting to dip a little bit in the rating system. You know, you heard some sponsor people say some things. Some major NFL sponsors said some stuff. Then it became that. Now, those same sponsors and those same people that might have been whispering or threatening or talking or whatever, they now on the Black Lives Matter side for whatever reasons. So they're not threatened by that anymore. There's nothing that's threatening them anymore. Like, what is threatening them?
So is Popovich right, Key? Is the league being hypocritical?
Of course.
Of course he is.
Of course.
Of course he's being hypocritical.
That's not anything new. That's not anything new. You know, now look. There's people protesting and signing petitions for him to, Roger Goodell, to release another statement, but this time make sure that you're addressing Colin Kaepernick. Is he going to do that? I'm a betting man. I'm betting no.
If he was going to do it, he would have done it already, right?
He would have did it already. He would have did it already. He ain't getting ready to do it again, because as far as they're concerned, we've already satisfied that by saying that we – or taking the actions. We put $250 million. We did this. You ain't going to just keep coming to us, forcing us to do something that we may not believe in.
It's the reality of it. The NFL has always been about its money. Its money and its influence. And they're trying to read the tea leaves today, but also they're trying to read the tea leaves for tomorrow. How little can they do right now so that they won't get messed up over with tomorrow? They're trying to play this game. And until Kaepernick's name comes out of Roger Goodell's mouth, we're always going to look at them with a little bit of a side eye. They're not good on every MLK Boulevard. They're not. And you can do all the cute little videos and donate all the money you want, but you know what you need to say. You know what you need to do. And you know good and damn well that whenever you come out in front of a microphone and you're either a room full of fans or journalists, we're going to ask you that question. This is why the NFL drives me crazy, because it's filled with all these successful people, but they always lose the press conference, which is the easy part. Winning the press conference is easy, but they always come out as losers in this. It's baffling to me.
I think I've won a few press conferences in my time.
Bugs Bunny, left field, right field, center field. All right, Bubba Wallace ran in the NASCAR race in Miami this weekend with a Black Lives Matter theme on his car. There was another car that had a very different theme. We'll talk about that next on the morning show on 710 ESPN. I know that we don't talk a ton of NASCAR on this show typically, but this was the first race that we've seen since NASCAR announced that they weren't going to allow any Confederate flags. Obviously, there's still no fans in the stands, so that really wasn't the issue. But Bubba Wallace had his car painted in a theme with Black Lives Matter painted on the side. There was a white hand and a black hand shaking hands on the hood of his car. And obviously, he's kind of become the face of this sport right now. There was another driver that had a different paint scheme on his car. Kyle Weatherman is another NASCAR driver, and his car had a back the blue theme. It hashtag back the blue, and it had that American flag that I'm sure a lot of people have seen. It's black and white with a blue line kind of running through the middle of it. It's kind of an interesting choice in the midst of all of this. You know, Alvin Kamara showing up to races to show support for Bubba Wallace. We've seen NASCAR come out very aggressively and say that we're about inclusion. We're not about this flag. And here it is, because back the blue is kind of the opposite of what we've been talking about for the last several weeks.
Well, I don't watch NASCAR, and that's probably the reason why. I mean, it makes no – whatever, man. At the end of the day, everybody's entitled to their own opinion. No one's ever saying don't back the blue. With the blue did right, I'm sure they would get all the backing in the world.
The thing that we're going to see, you know, and I wrote about it this weekend for the Times. I've talked about it a lot, which is NASCAR's got to follow through. They got to follow through and not allow the message to get hijacked and not allow people to push the Confederate flag down the sport's throat and say, we're not about that. We're about this flag, and you need to get in line. Like, NASCAR's got some heavy lifting to do because they have people who are popular drivers who may not agree with removing the Confederate flag, who may not agree with the protesting, who may want to communicate something differently in regards to the protesting. NASCAR has now said where the stake is planted. This is where we're putting our flag, and now they can't move it. They can't move it because they got this brother out there, man. Bubba Wallace has stuck his neck out there, man. They can't run him out the sport. They can't let him get run out the sport. They can't let fans try and run him out the sport. They need to stand with this brother. And I thought it was very apropos that he asked for the Confederate flag. See, God works in mysterious ways. He asked for the Confederate flag to be removed from NASCAR. And he drives with a Black Lives Matter car on Sunday. And what place did he finish, Travis?
13th, I believe.
And what's the amendment that freed the slaves?
13th.
See, God works in mysterious ways, man. God works in mysterious ways. You know, it would have been a great story for him to finish first place. It would have been great. But finishing 13th allows this little moment to happen. The guy, the brother named Bubba, went to the white folks and said, take that flag down. The flag that represented the Civil War. He finished 13th. Y'all don't hear me. He finished 13th. The same amendment that freed the slaves. That was all about the Civil War. I'm telling you, man, this thing is divine. This thing is mystic. This thing can't be stopped.
I hope so. I hope so. But I wonder. Because in the same week that that happened, LZ, And Kyle Weatherman, I don't know anything about him other than the way that his car was painted.
Yeah, but
and I'm not putting anything on him. But here's what I'm getting at, is that on the heels of them saying no to the Confederate flag, on the heels of Bubba Wallace speaking out and saying this needs to go, and on the circuit or the league or however you want to characterize NASCAR doing the right thing and saying we're not going to do it, that very quickly at least one of their members took a different position and saying that, you know, the back the blue. Okay. But this is in contrast to the message that we've been talking about. This is the opposite.
But that's his little sneaky way of communicating with them.
But it's not sneaky at all. That's the point. It's not sneaky. And NASCAR was okay with that. NASCAR's okay with these things. And you just wonder, like you were saying a second ago, LZ, maybe there are drivers that do not support the movement. Maybe there are drivers that would like to say, oh no, I think the flag should be there, but they're not because of the way that the wind is blowing right now. I wonder if the opposite isn't true. Maybe there are guys that support Bubba Wallace and want to make sure that their voices are heard, but they're worried about saying it out loud because they know that the wind is going to change direction in their sport in particular. In their sport, that yes, we can say there's going to be no Confederate flags here, but when it comes back, when it comes time to putting people back at the tracks, we know they're coming back. I know if I say something that I'm going to lose fans. And if I lose fans, I lose money. And if I lose sponsors, I lose money. So I can't say anything for the opposite reason, because here we are in the very next race with a Black Lives Matter car. We have a back the blue car. And it's just, it's like, Okay. But what are we going to do here? Like, what happens next? That's the question I have, not just in NASCAR, which is the one that's first and foremost right now, but what happens next? This is what Greg Popovich was talking about. What happens when the games start and half the league is on a knee and somebody, maybe it's the president again, maybe it's somebody else, maybe it's another player, and they say something that's on the opposite side of this? What happens then? And I think this is a good example of that, because I'm not convinced that the change is here for good. I hope that it is. I hope that I'm wrong. But we see the wind change direction on this stuff all the time.
Yeah, but one guy putting the blue on his car is going to get, I think the NASCAR and some of the people within NASCAR is going to push back on that at some point. In terms of the sports as a whole, the NFL, the NBA, you're going to have some people that are going to say some things. But again, it's more people than ever before. And because it's more people than ever before, it's going to be hard to silence and quiet. It's just, it's good. You know, it's easy to quiet 100, but it ain't easy to quiet millions on top of millions. Like, it's, you got to think of it. These entire leagues now are with everything. Before, there's a few in this league, a few in that league. Everybody was just trying to hold their position, making sure that they didn't get fired or cut or traded. Or everybody was just kind of just – now it's like, oh, we good now. We're not worried about what y'all talking about. Because as that momentum starts to kick in and people start stacking up on top of each other and they start to compile and become more and more and more, it's harder to get rid of. It starts to grow and there's nothing you can do. And that's where we at. We growing. It ain't gonna be nothing you can do. I mean, some of them. Chance yesterday walking down the street with LZ made all the sense in the damn world. You know, some of the things that people were saying as we was walking, you and I'm listening to it, made all the sense in the damn world. Things like, you ain't listening, but we ain't going nowhere. You may not be listening, but we're not going nowhere.
It is
really just about following the energy, Travis. Just follow the energy. And you can go online right now and see people in Montana with no black people around protesting with signs. There's a guy in London that organized a rally in London, and one of the anti-protesters showed up and got surrounded, and the brother picked him up and removed him from the crowd and protected his safety. Because he said, and this was so amazing, he was like, this started because George Floyd was killed and the police officer around him didn't do anything. If someone had intervened, maybe George would still be alive. So he said, I intervened because he didn't want the same thing to happen to that white man that went to that rally to try to be an agitator. So he picked him up and showed him compassion. And that's happening in London, man. They know this story intimately all over the world. It's going to be hard. It's going to be hard if you're a supporter of NASCAR to say we're going to pull funding because you're losing numbers because you decided to stand up on the right side of history. Who wants to shop at a store that says you because you didn't want to have racism and you've lost fans, now we're not going to shop? What? No one's going to go for that. So NASCAR just needs to follow through because the people in the movement is going to be there.
You've seen it with J.J. Watt and Baker Mayfield, too, where they have been, you know, whether directly or indirectly said on Twitter, hey, you guys aren't going to do this, right? And they very quickly said, you're not paying attention. Baker Mayfield said, absolutely, I am. And J.J. Watt said, if you still don't understand what this is about, you haven't been listening. So I have some faith in some spots that I don't have. And it's going to take a minute for me to jump on with NASCAR and just understand that that's actually the way that they feel about this. And that's actually the way that they're going to try to enforce this moving forward. All right. We've heard Kyrie Irving speak. Antonio Davis, former head of the NBAPA, says that LeBron needs to speak up next. You'll hear from him on the morning show on 710 ESPN.
Did you know Geico's now offering an extra 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies? That's 15% on top of what Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Your dentist to actually believe you?
And you're flossing every day.
Absolutely.
Great. And you're cutting down on your sweets?
Of course.
Wonderful. Then I don't even need to look in there.
Great. See you in 6 months.
There's never been a better time to switch to Geico. Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Limitations apply. Visit geico.com for details.
So Kyrie has been talking. He was very outspoken on a phone call that he had with about 100 other players on Friday night, saying that he doesn't believe that they should resume the season. He thinks there's some momentum and that playing a season will diminish the message. LeBron James and most of the other stars in the NBA have been very adamant in their desire to return to play. I want you guys to listen to this. This is former NBA Players Association President Antonio Davis saying that he would like to hear from LeBron James.
I think there will be a point in time where he has to come out and take a stance. You know, we've heard his tweets, but I think he'll have to come out and say exactly what he said in those tweets. Take a stance one way or another and keep it moving. I know for him, like, hey, I want to play because we've got a chance to win it all. So I get that, but I think he has to show his passion about what's really going on, the topics, because he has sons. He has little black boys in his household. So, and he has a family that he has to take care of. So it'll be interesting to see what he comes out. But I think he just has to come out as a man, as a leader of this league, and just take a stance one way or another.
Has he not done that?
Yeah, I was about to say, I thought he's been doing that the whole time. Like, what? We're in a pandemic. You're not really. I mean, what, he could Facebook Live or something like that? I mean, like, I don't understand.
I don't think there's anything he's not doing. There's no ambiguity on where LeBron James stands on any of this.
Yeah,
stuff.
Where is that? Because it seems clear to me.
Yeah, I don't know what, you know. I don't know what the question was specifically. So I don't know what specifically he's answering to. But just on his face. This isn't, you know, him subtweeting Kevin Love to play harder. He's pretty clear. You know, he's been pretty clear about, you know, his place and not just wanting basketball to return, but also just in the movement itself. I mean, he went out and helped co-found an organization to register black people to vote. So I'm not quite sure which aspect that he needs to come out on as a man and as a leader. But as far as I'm concerned, the two main stories, the return to sports and this movement that's happening, he's been very present.
Yeah, I like you said, I don't quite understand the context of the comments, because if anybody has been outspoken through all of this, it's been LeBron James. That we know where he stands on this issue. We know where he stands on the return to play. Maybe it's about him addressing the Kyrie part specifically, that here's why I think it's okay for us to go back. Here's why I think we can go back and still push the message forward and continue to have the conversations that we've had, despite the fact that we're still playing basketball, because I don't know if there's anybody other than the most diehard LeBron James haters that think that he hasn't been anywhere on this issue. He's been everywhere.
So in the world of social media, and this is how everybody is always telling me, including LZ, platform, social media, followers, they listen, people paying attention. So when he tweets something out, that's not better than him saying it verbally?
There's no difference, really, in my estimation.
It seems like to me, when LeBron James got however many million followers that he has, it seems like you can reach people, if you him, through your social media, more so than holding a little bit of a press conference that they may or may not run. In this way, you controlling your message the way you want to.
How much of it, when we go back to the NBA season, which is coming up in, you know, less than 2 months now, which is exciting to say out loud, that we're going to have real NBA basketball coming up at the end of July, that after a game, right? I mean, are we going to be talking about the games exclusively, or because of the climate that we're in right now, will the games themselves be less discussed and the issues more discussed, that when LeBron is sitting there at that press conference afterwards, and it's going to be a different press conference because it's going to be so fewer people in there asking about, hey, on this series, when you pass the ball to KCP, what, there's not going to be a ton of that. There's only going to be a small amount of media embedded in this process to begin with. Do you think that they take the opportunity, and not just LeBron, but the players at large, use that opportunity to talk about things that are more than just the basketball games?
I think it'll be a little bit of a combination of both. Because more likely than not, LZ, you can speak to it because you've been at press conferences interviewing people like me, that your job is to be there to really talk about the game and what transpired in the game, not necessarily grilling somebody about what's going on in the streets.
Well, I would think that he's going to get a couple of questions about what's going on in the streets, but you're right, Key. You know, typically those press conferences has local media, local cameras, and they need clips and quotes about what happened on the court. Now, there will be people who are going to ask about, you know, what's happening in the streets. And if he says something that raises an eyebrow, then you can see the press conference kind of taking a different direction and being primarily focused about the streets if LeBron James is so choose to say something that inspires that kind of series of questions to follow up with. But I would think that regardless of if they ask the question or not, his involvement in this space is solid. And he's laid the groundwork to continue to be involved in this space, either through producing documentaries or, you know, organizations like More Than a Vote. So I don't really know what Antonio Davis wants from him. You know, this isn't a case of absenteeism from him. I don't know what the question is that he was answering, but I have a hard time finding which area, which space LeBron James needs to step up in terms of being a leader.
Is there anyone else in the league that has the voice of LeBron that could have
Steph said
something, it would have the same resonance that if LeBron
It wouldn't have the total same resonance, but I would say in terms of having enough teeth, in terms of, because, you know, Steph rolls with the president.
Steph
got the reins. He rolled with the president. He's been, you know, very vocal. He beefed with President Trump. So Steph is kind of like in that space a little bit, not at LeBron James's level, because LeBron's just been doing it longer. I think Steph's got enough pull in that space, yeah.
And LeBron is a bigger global icon than Steph. So, but Steph has Steph is right there. You know, they all are right there to a degree. It's just that LeBron is just a bigger force within the NBA. That's all. He's just a bigger force within the NBA.
He's a force outside the NBA as well, which is fairly unique. In his own right. All right, Brian Windhorst is going to join us next. We'll continue this conversation with him. We'll get his thoughts on Kyrie Irving's plan as well. That's all coming up on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN. All right, as promised, we are joined right now by ESPN NBA insider Brian Windhorst joining us on the Sprint People's Hotline. Brian, good morning. How are you?
Hi there.
What's happening, Big Winnie? How you doing, man? Hanging in there?
It's the only choice I have.
The only choice you have, man. Well, come on, man. It's early in the morning. You got to get some juice going. So obviously, we're getting a little bit of pushback from Kyrie Irving on this, if they should play, if they should not play. Somehow, Dwight Howard has inserted his name into the conversation, but then yesterday, his agent's trying to back him out. Where do we stand with this?
You know, guys, what I think, look, the message that Kyrie and Dwight are backing is important. And certainly every player in the league is aware of what's going on in our country and the societal challenge and change that is being called for. I'm not sure all of them agree that the best way to handle that is to not go. And I'm not sure that Dwight and Kyrie are the guys who can lead a movement. But I do think that the NBA and the union have worked together, especially under Adam Silver and Chris Paul and Michelle Roberts. They have worked very well together for years, and they have addressed issues like this in the past, and they have worked together to do something that where they can amplify their voice without encouraging conflict within the league. And I suspect that will happen again, because in addition to all of the financial incentives for the players to go to Orlando and restart, it will provide them an incredible platform for their voices to be heard. And I think that based on my conversations with people in the league, and I haven't talked to all 450 players, of course, I think that many agree that that may be the better way to go, and to let the union do its work. The union has really done a really good job of getting an agreement for the players that is as good as they could possibly have dreamed for under the circumstances, and I think that's the route that will probably be more effective.
What are the precautions being taken, Brian, for the older coaches who are head coaches in the league, maybe some of their assistants? Do they have anyone advocating for them in terms of their concerns? Have you heard anything along those lines?
Well, they have the laws on their side, and the law says that you can't tell somebody that they cannot work based on their age. And so the NBA can take a look at their health records, advise them, prepare them, test them, try to protect them, but they can't say to them that you can't work. And so whether or not we see all of these coaches or players, you know, people who are much younger who may have pre-existing conditions, you know, the MLS came out with its protocol last week, and it's important because they're also going to Disney World, and they said that players who have moderate to severe asthma could be deemed high risk and may be told and warned maybe not to go. Well, there's a number of NBA players who have asthma. James Harden has asthma. JaVale McGee has asthma. I'm not a doctor. I can't say what's going to happen, but there's going to be a number of people who are alerted to the potential risks that they have may be elevated, but the NBA cannot stop any of them from coming in there. And so that's the reality. You have the right in this country to get sick, and so those coaches will have the right to do so if they choose.
Brian Windhorst joining us here on the morning show on the Sprint People's Hotline. And Brian, is that the biggest variable or wild card or however we want to characterize it, that once the season does restart, that if somebody tests positive, what the ripples on the pond is there? Is that the biggest fear that the league has, the reboot, is when they finally do have a positive test? Because it seems unlikely that you could have that many people together and not have a positive test.
I think there's going to be positive tests before we even get to Orlando. So starting a week from tomorrow, the NBA came out with these guidelines over the weekend. Starting next Tuesday, all players who are and staff members who are going to go into the bubble begin to get testing. And we just saw over the last couple of weeks, as all of these college athletes came back to campus, that we had positive tests in a number of different places. I believe it was 6 football players at Alabama, for example. I believe a number of athletes at the University of Houston. Last week, the MLS began testing as players get ready to go into their bubble, and at least one player from the DC United tested positive. So I think that just based on the realities of the rates and the realities of where we are in the country, I suspect we're going to have people on teams, whether it's players or staff members, who come up positive before we even get there. And so this is going to be a whole thing about risk management. This entire process, this entire endeavor is all behind the shadow of what you are willing to accept risk-wise. And that's going to be a huge factor. And if we see a number of people test positive before you even get into the bubble, it may affect how many players and people want to go. But the idea about doing all that is to create that bubble with nobody sick in it. And so a lot of doctors believe that if you're going to try to do this, this is the best way to go about it, even with the negative side effects.
Brian Windhorst joining us here on the morning show. Brian, is there any more clarity toward the start of the 2021 season, even though all this is going on?
No, because, and I know that this is complicated for fans, and I don't want to bog people down, but the union has to make 2 separate deals with the league. The first deal is this restart deal to finish this season in a single site in Orlando. We're close to it. I suspect that it's going to get done within this week. The league has to address the players who are skittish or have other reasons, but I think that's going to get done. Then they have to make a completely different deal for next season going forward, which is more like the deal that the baseball players are trying to make right now with the owners. And I've seen so many people say, well, look at the NBA getting their act together and look at stupid baseball not getting their act together. Well, it is apples and oranges, because the baseball is going into a season where every single game they play, the owners are going to operate at a deficit. This NBA season did get three-quarters of the way played. Three-quarters of the game sold tickets. There was a lot of revenue that was taken in. Players get paid on a 12-month cycle. So in theory, you're getting paid in November for games that you previously played in March or April, okay? And those games took place, a lot of them, that they got money for. Well, next season, there's going to be either no fans or vastly reduced fans. So revenue that could potentially be up to 40% less, but everybody's got their contracts already signed. So they're going to have to make a separate deal about what to do about next season. And just like with baseball, that could potentially get contentious and could lead to labor problems. But that's another deal into the future, which is why I can understand why no one's focusing on it right now.
Brian, when you think about, you know, the relationship that the players obviously have with the league, where do you see the NBA next using this muscle in this conversation of anti-racism and this conversation of, you know, social justice? Are they going to, is the league going to sit back and let the LeBron James do things individually, or do you see something more substantial coming back, coming down the pipeline as a league?
Well, if you recall, when the there was the run of protesting during the national anthem in the NFL, the NBA came together between the union and the league and said, we are going to come up with a program that we can operate in all of our cities with a bunch of our players that integrates the league helping, the players using their voice, and everyone using their platform, which was all these national TV games, which was shirts that they wore before games. And the NBA actually did not have protests during the national anthem during that time, because the union and the league worked together to find ways they could make meaningful change and use their voice. And I suspect that they will go back to those roots and say, we have 3 consecutive months where you're going to be on TV every single day with people focused on us. And not only that, we're stuck in this bubble, so we even have less distractions and we can focus our non-professional basketball time on potentially making statements or leading charges or you know, making gatherings. It doesn't seem unreasonable to me why the NBA players couldn't get together as a group and talk about these things in Orlando where everybody could watch them. And you know, I know that Steven Jackson, and I know Steven personally. We all do. We all work with him. I saw what Steven said about going back to basketball would take would distract from this movement. I think out of respect, I think a player like LeBron would say, actually, this gives an opportunity to extend that and amplify that, where so many other people who want to move on can be reminded of the importance of it. And so that's what the union is working on right now with the league. I promise you, over the last few days, the union has been listening. The league has been listening. And just as they've done in the past, they will work on something together.
You know, Brian, with that in mind, going back to the question before, you're talking about the differences between baseball and the NBA, and you talked about how the players right now in the union are working with the league. How did they get to this spot where there seems to be genuine trust and genuine respect and genuine good faith between the players' union and the owners and the league itself? Because that is pretty rare in professional sports where the league and the players seem to be on the same page. How did they do that?
Adam Silver has made this a priority from almost the first day he became commissioner. He has worked with the players and supported the players, supported some of the players' desires, whether it was as simple as saying, hey, could we have the full week at All-Star off, to, hey, I know that the rules say that we're not allowed to wear non-uniform shirts and warm-ups, but I want to wear a shirt that says, I can't breathe, to respect Eric Garner. And Adam Silver said, we want you to use your voice to do that. We encourage you to do that. And to much bigger things, like I talked about with the national anthem that they worked with together. And over the course of time, there is a trust level that's been built. Now, let me just say that Adam Silver's time as commissioner has coincided with incredible revenue growth in the league. Everybody has been getting paid. Franchise ownership or franchise values have exploded. We've seen salaries. When Adam Silver took over, only two players in history had made over $30 million in a season. Kobe once and Michael Jordan twice. This year, there were over 20 players that made over $30 million, okay? Just in his 6 years of tenure. So part of the reason why he's so popular, frankly, is everybody's gotten rich. And along the way, he has encouraged players to use their voices for societal change and to make them feel comfortable doing that and not feel repressed. And so that background, when we get to this point, which, you know, Adam didn't know this was coming. Adam didn't know there was a pandemic where he was going to have to ask the players to make two different, very difficult deals in one summer to keep NBA going. Adam didn't know that this terrible thing was going to happen in Minneapolis and elsewhere. We were going to have this major challenge and this major confronting of our ills as a society, a reckoning at the same time. But the way Adam has taken his business and handled his business and built that relationship allows for those trusts to be used. And a big thing to me is, will that remain together when the conversations are no longer about players getting their payroll increased by 70% or 50% over the course of the last 6 years? And it's about losing money. And it's about an owner talking about how we're going to manage money going out the door, whether that changes. But overall, I think he's been as best equipped to handle this as any commissioner on a modern era of pro sports.
Brian Windhorst, ESPN NBA Insider, joining us here on The Morning Show. Brian, thanks so much for your time. Always a pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Mm-hmm. All right, guys. I think that's fascinating that they basically took an approach of, you know what, there's a whole bunch of money we made. Let's figure this out together. Why can't the other leagues do it? We'll do that next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN.